Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Who's on?
Daniel.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, this is Lars who's there.
Hi, Lars. This is Glenn.
Oh, hi.
Hi, yes, dear. Who's there?
This is Glenn.
Hi.
And here's Lars.
Hi, Lars.
And me, Daniel.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ira.
Hi. So, we are five people now. Do we expect someone else?
No.
Probably not, so we might go on and just continue.
Yes. So my 10 minutes ago reminder seems to have helped to get us together.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I was coming. I had minutes open. I just wasn't watching the time, or I'd have been with you a minute ago.
So,
right. So let's start right in with status of common printing dialogue.
Yes, for the common printing dialogue, it looks nice. Lars will start on 1st of October coding on it. And it is also the way that the German government organization is working together with Canonical to share the funding. And so we will definitely from 1st of October on have Lars working full-time on the common printing dialogue.
Very good. I've recorded that. Thank you.
Yes. Lars, do you have something to add?
No. Actually, that's it. I'll be employed at Canonical actually, so I don't know if it'll be full time and for how long, but I'm working full time on this and other projects probably. But it'll start with the comment-fitting dialogue.
Excellent. Okay, so we will know more about that in our next meeting. Or next but one meeting.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes, the first after the 1st of October.
Okay.
Yes, when it is Wednesday, the 5th of October, Lars will at least have 1.5 days worked for Canonical until then.
Okay, I was already...
He does not work on the 3rd of October, which is the national holiday of Germany.
Actually, the PWG meeting is the first week of October, so the first Wednesday available is the 12th.
Yes.
Which would actually work better because Lars will, in fact, have been working on it for a week.
Yes, yes. He is a week behind him, and so he can...
Right.
He
should be done by then, right?
What?
He should be done by then.
Ah.
Given how quick Lars is, yes.
Yes.
No doubt he will say, well, I'm just putting the finishing touches.
He's doing the documentation, that terrible
thing. Right, yeah, it's the documentation. That's what takes it out of you.
Yes, yes. And when
according to our agenda...
If you get 1 year at Canonical, then Ubuntu does not have any bug anymore.
Oh, right. It's a bug-free printing. I like that.
Especially it would be great if Lars could fix bug number one of Ubuntu. Lars, did you already look at Launchpad what bug number one is?
Yeah, I'm not confident that I can do that.
Don't do it with a cell phone. Do it on a powerful computer because this bug is so much messed up that Launchpad has scaling problems with it.
Oh, dear.
It is. The bug is Linux. Is that Linux has a too small market share. This is more or less this bug. And then many people added tasks to this bug. Tasks are more or less marking in which package this bug occurs for a lot of different distributions and versions of these Linux distributions. And so there are too many tasks on the bug, which makes the page of the bug entry in the bug tracker so long that it is a very high load for the web browser when one opens this page. And so don't try to open it with a cell phone.
All right, good. Let us move to a next topic. Status of independent JTAPI project. Glenn, do you have any update from Jesse?
No, he's never responded again, so he must have lost interest. I don't know. I'll probe him again.
Okay, thank you.
I hope we did not lose him.
Yeah, I'll look into it. Someone's talking, but I can't hear him.
Neither can I.
It's just office noise.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I'm working on the mobile print dialogue.
Ah, great.
So, I got a little bogged down with another project this month, so not much progress, but I'd like to discuss a couple things. We're trying to use JTAPI as part of that solution, okay, or at least the definitions we came up with the header files and stuff, okay, for the objects and attributes and values. Just to make things simpler, I made a mapping document that takes the word, literally only all it does is take the word FSG underscore JTAPI and make it OP underscore JTAPI or whatever. I just got rid of the...
Oh, right, in order to make the prefixes independent of whichever fashionable group we happen to be in.
Right now it just says OP instead of FSG, so I just made it open printing. But one of the things that have been brought up in the PWG recently through IPP Everywhere, Cloud Print, blah, 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 is that we may be missing now a few attributes. I think you brought that up, actually, Ira.
And rather more than a few, if you actually want the whole set. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we, you know, for at least the mobile stuff.
Even if you skip the 600 finishing unique alerts,
thank
which
you
could skip easily and just say, look at the IANA registry, same way we did in JTAPI for a lot of other things anyway. We don't do large enums, not on that scale. Even if you skip that, Glenn, there's 80 or 100 new attributes or several collection attributes. And the question is, does JTAPI even want, how's JTAPI going to deal with, like, media?
So we need to evaluate. The question now comes down to, since you understand and I understand, do we want to re-examine the JTAPI objects and attributes just quickly, no major activity, and, you know, hit the ones that are really important to add to it or not?
It is my midterm opinion that we should do a refresh of JTAPI to add the new ones. It would be harmless to the existing ones because they were well aligned with IPP and JTAPI.
Well, they were very good. I have used them many times already, Ira.
Yeah.
I really like the set we have.
So do I. So, in essence, Glenn, I don't think there's any, you know, what we gain is things like the actual document object, which was a stub in JTAPI because...
Right.
We didn't have it, but we do now, and there's document format details and some other interesting arrays that we might want to at least string in code. And
we should update the JTAPI attributes, well, objects in this case.
Yeah, objects.
Values.
Because I think at the time, because it was still late in the IETF process, we didn't put subscription in either. And when you make a job ticket, it's awfully nice to stick the subscription object inside of it.
Yeah, I think there are three things missing. It says so. I can't remember, you know, document was obvious, but I can't remember the other right now. So can we...
And the other real highlight one, I would say, Glenn, of all the millions of new production printing attributes, who cares, we're not actually going to use them, is page overrides, because even on a pretty small scale, page overrides actually make sense, and it's become kind of mainstream.
We need a document object and all of this stuff. We need the attribute. Is that an object or an attribute?
Page overrides is a collection attribute that has some ranges and stuff, and, you know, some exception. Effectively, it says, instead of using the document processing from the current in-scope document object or the parent job object, use these document processing instructions instead for this page range.
Okay. Anything else you can think of really off the top of your head while we're discussing it?
I haven't examined it, but I would say because we wanted a lot of them in IPP 2.0 second edition and in IPP Everywhere, the JPS 2 spec, which actually had some useful stuff, not just for production printing. The most important one, I think, Glenn, is the whole operations for resubmitting a job, you know, for making a new proper copy of it and rerunning it, and the subordinate operation reprint, which says take this saved job or proof printed job and print it, because it's proof print and save job support, especially proof print. I consider that the low hanging fruit, and that's in JPS 2, which we have not yet IANA registered because it's just last year.
Okay, so I will make it a task to make a pass at updating the document and sending it out, or I can just send it to Ira and see what we think. I don't want it to be I didn't want to get carried away, but I understand.
I don't either, but I kind of like not having a proper document object seems to me okay.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough one to deal with on a daily basis. I can deal without the page overrides, but the document object is a little tough.
Right, you could live without page overrides, but proof print, even on fairly low-end printers, is becoming kind of like more a mainstream operation. It's just not that uncommon. So to have it in band in the protocol instead of in the implementation seems a nicer solution.
Yeah, okay. So Glenn will draft something.
maybe even before drafting the JTAPI update, Glenn,
yes.
If I were you, I'd just go through the list of stuff that changed. And if you want a copy of that, I got the plain text 10 lists I sent, the so-called IANA registration considerations, for the PWG specs, for everything except JPS2, and I have to extract those to plain text this week anyway. So that would give you a list of all the attributes and all the subordinate attributes in the collection attributes, and, you know, it would all be kind of obvious.
Ira will send Glenn the...
I think they're actually even archived on the PWG site. I'll double-check.
Yeah, but that way...
I'll send you the link.
Send me the link of the list. Okay, the list to...
Yeah, to the IANA registration of the 10 PWG specs.
Okay.
Because that'll just save the whole... At least then, you know, we just start from the simple flat list and we go, no, not all that stuff, but yes, this stuff.
Okay, we'll start with something.
Yeah.
So I'll draft up a new version and I'll send it out and then I'll expect comments.
Okay, good.
I'd like to proceed ahead.
So would I, and I'm hoping to, by gentle arm twisting, engage Mike Sweet to look at it a bit.
Oh, okay. All right, as I said, I'm just really writing the code right now for the back end of it, and I've not really worried about or done much with Linux graphics, although I'm very good at graphics, that's not my problem. So I'm now using GTK because I want to use it as a C module. So I'm now writing the beginnings of a, you know, something to play with.
Okay, so you're using GTK.
Yeah, versus Qt, because I'd like to stay with C instead of C++. That's really the main differences.
Okay, I'm going to make that in my notes in order to stick.
Yeah, from what I can figure out, the biggest difference between the two is one is oriented to C and one is oriented to C++.
But you're doing mobile, right?
Right now I'm just writing the app on a desktop application and probably emulate a mobile screen.
Okay.
I have a lot to do.
Yeah, I'm just thinking because Qt is more common on their mobiles, their Migo, and then support for Android.
So I did start wrong. I didn't check that out. Ah, bummers.
Well, there might be JTK for Android, but I know Nokia sponsored it that ports Android.
So Android and uses Qt, huh? Okay.
Nope. Well, it can use Qt. It lets you, you can now use native stuff. I used to only have to use Java, but yeah, I don't know the full story, just I know Qt's for it.
Okay, I need to research that then. I need to know
what
a GUI system or graphic is used by Linux-based mobile solution. Okay.
So, Glenn, a C++ binding would, at a sufficiently high level, be similar to a Java binding. That is, there would be first-class objects, right?
Right. I mean,
it's a matter for speculation.
I could write the whole project in Java if we want.
Well, and I'm not personally, I think that's a bad idea because there's a limit to scalability. I honestly would far prefer it in plain C if I had my choice, but, you know, I could live with C++.
Yeah, I try to stay with C because I know it's more portable.
Well, it's especially more portable to smaller real-time operating systems.
Right, right, right.
The assumption that a whole lot of standard Linux running on a fire-breathing 32-bit chip is going to be available in every mobile device is wrong.
Yeah, right. With a fan going in the back of it, right?
Right, with a fan going in the back of it every time you hit any keys on the 6x9 touchscreen. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the cool.
Yeah, well, sir.
yes. It may not, in the end, make any difference whether I use Qt, GTK, or some XYZ, because someone will always have to translate it.
Well, that's true, and we are talking about the graphic front end. We're not talking about the bones. And
yeah, I mean, I will...
The bones would remain in pure C.
Yeah, I'll abstract away from the interface as quickly as I can in the code. So okay. There won't be much connection to the graphics part of it. Yeah, I always abstract away as fast as I can and then get down to something that's just pure code. Okay.
So, Glenn, in your draft update, I know it's a pain in the neck, could you conceivably fix the FSGJT prefix to OP or OPJT?
That's what I said I've done.
Okay.
Already in the code I have, I left the FSG, and if everybody's comfortable with it, I'll just get rid of the FSG code. But I have the FSG code, the header file, sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wrote another header file, which just is a mapping document, says pound define OP blah to FSG blah.
Oh, I see. So you kept the JT. That's what
I have to, because we're using that. But if we, as the open printing group just want to say, no, we're going to drop the FSG one and just use one that says OP, I don't care. I don't think anybody else cares.
I don't think anybody else cares either, and I think it's long-term a far better idea than keeping FSG prefixes here and Linux Foundation prefixes there and so on.
Well, first of all, they're long.
Well, yeah, Linux Foundation, abbreviated to LF, is meaningless. Totally meaningless.
Yeah, so
and unfortunately, it doesn't abbreviate well at all.
If everybody's comfortable, I will just use OP underscore blah.
I would prefer to do that and do that as a general behavior for future software projects.
Change all definite from FSG to OP. No problem. That's all, basically already done. I just take off the pounds of fire. It'll be easy. All right. Okay, what else? I was going to try to publish some code this month, but I just didn't get that far. So this next month, I'm hoping to be a little more free of my other project. And on top of that, we're moving this week, so that'll be really fun. what else?
Okay, are we ready to move on, Glenn, or do you have more?
I think there's nothing else for me on that project.
Okay.
Then it's Daniel's turn.
Yep, for status of GSOC Boomatic project.
Yeah, it's good news. Soft pencils down date was yesterday, and I also made the last major commit to Fumatic trunk. So now Fumatic can be backed or can use an SQL backend with SQLite for, well, everyday thing.
Yes, this means one could now install the Fumatic, use Fumatic DB engine with a Fumatic database in SQLite format instead of using the raw XML files on a local installation, so that the PPD files for CUPS are generated out of the SQLite database, which is much faster than generating them out of XML.
Excellent.
What did you say?
I said excellent.
And this way we have a possibility to we have a format which is the one easily accessible. Man gets quickly PPDs out of it, and it's also easily changeable as it is an SQL database and not an archive of compressed PPD files. The archive of compressed PPD files is perhaps faster. I think Daniel should compare this. One cannot simply modify it. One can only regenerate the whole thing when one modifies something in the XML files. Another thing which one should look at is the memory consumption, the disk consumption. The XML is probably much bigger than the SQL and also much bigger than the compressed PPD archive. And for the compressed PPD archive versus the SQL, I don't know. I think Daniel knows.
Yeah, I do. The XML is about 6 megabytes. The DB compiled is also about 6. Actually, it's 7.2. And then the compressed PPDs, because it is compressed, it's actually more like 400 kilobytes.
Yes.
So don't
save by compiling the XMLs into an SQLite database, but you save a lot by using compressed PPD archives.
Yeah.
The recommended way for a distro.
Well, if I can press the Open Printing or the SQLite database, then it does go down to 500 kilobytes.
Yes. Then it's comparable to the compressed PPD archive. Can such an SQLite database work compressed?
We would have to decompress it every time we use it.
Yes.
Which adds like maybe a second or two of latency. So, yeah.
But this could, for example, be done by the post-installation script of a package, because usually the user has enough space for an installed system, and the compression is more important to deliver the stuff in the packages. On a live CD, one would perhaps decompress it online, perhaps triggered by the first access or so, because a live CD gives a constrained space when one would use SQLite in a distro. What did you say?
Do the packaging, like RPM and DEB, do they not provide compression themselves?
The packages itself are compressed. And when one installs the packages, they get uncompressed. I don't know how well it works on live CDs, how well this live compression of these CDs works, because these are compressed file systems with all the packages installed in the file system. So then one has the CD file system compression and not the compression of the package anymore.
I imagine it would work quite well, because the reason the database is so large is it's going to have a lot of white space in it, and that's something that gets compressed in even the most primitive compression schemes.
And one thing is, how is the speed? Have you compared the speeds of the different ways to access the Fumetic database?
I actually haven't. I can go here. I'll profile that and get you back. Or I'll tell you guys the numbers before the end of the meeting.
Yes.
Or better yet, send us a note saying the numbers, and I'll stick them in the minutes.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. And so it looks all great. It was a great summer of code, and there's now, I think, something like 2 weeks left.
A week left.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And 1 week for evaluation, and then it's finished. So this summer was really, we had really a great project, and so a great step forward for Fumetic. This SQLite stuff, we'll not get into Ubuntu or Neric, because we are already after feature freeze. And also, the gain is not so big as we have the compressed PPD archives. It will go into the usual upstream development and will make up a new version, a new feature release soon. And so it will get in later distribution versions. But I think also that perhaps when I make a new feature release, that I also will add the possibility to the build system that one can use the PPD compressor PyPPD easily without needing to do it separately in the packaging for the distro.
That seems like a very good idea.
The configure script checked whether PyPPD is installed and uses it by default if it's installed. It checks also whether SQLite is installed. Would use it as the second place when SQLite is installed and PyPPD not. It would use SQLite. And it will naturally have a command line option that you can also manually choose in which way you want to access the Fumetic database. And probably this will not happen in Fumetic DB engine, but in Fumetic DB, so that these are different ways to compile the Fumetic DB. And then Fumetic DB engine will automatically find a Fumetic DB openprinting.db SQLite file or not, and so Fumetic DB engine will switch between SQLite or raw XML. And for the PyPPD case, Fumetic DB engine is not used at all. There it's only a build dependency, then Fumetic DB engine is only used for the compilation of Fumetic DB. Yes, this is the state of the Fumetic.
Okay. Hang on a sec. I'm writing.
So Till Epson did become a silver member of Linux Foundation.
Ah, great.
You ought to see if you can get some money.
Yes.
Since our interest is printing, so.
Yes. And this is also a good thing as Epson is also using the Open Printing website to deliver packages.
Right, right.
And it's working well. People told on several Ubuntu users told that it's great when they plugged their printer and they got the driver from the manufacturer automatically.
That actually to the end user is far more impressive than any particular UI or anything. Just getting the right driver for a change.
Yes, this is already a great step when the printer is correctly set up. and when one does not need to do anything special to do so, when everything goes automatically to reach that case. Several years ago, it was a nightmare to get up some piece of hardware set up with Linux.
Well, not quite a nightmare, but it's not easy.
Well, for a non-computer professional, it may have not been a nightmare, but it certainly was bad dreams. okay, status of other GSOC projects like the OpenICC project and
yes,
whatever.
The OpenICC printing dialogue project seems to be working. I didn't see any user interface stuff, but I have informed the guy some time ago about that the dialogue will go get to a reality, that he can work towards it.
Right.
And also told him that that he should work together with Lars. And Lars, you know that there's an open ICC Google Summer of Code project by Joe Simon about color management part.
Yeah, color management. Mike Sweet is the official liaison for the PWG to that project and has been sending email.
So that we last that you should work together with Joe Simon to get his code and to get this into the common printing dialogue. And you should contact him already before the 1st of October so that he does not go away and you are all alone with the code which is deposited at Google without someone helping you on getting it integrated.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
So it's just proceeding, right?
Yeah, I think.
And there is another printing project about print servers and so, but I never got some report about this project, how it's going. It is going. The student passed midterm, but I don't have any reports on how it's going.
That's the independent project about job tickets?
It's about servers. It's a Google Summer of Code project, official Google Summer of Code project about job management on servers with accounting and things like that.
Yeah, I thought it's using job ticket, but I don't think it's using PWG job ticket or JTAPI. The accounting stuff is attributes of IPP.
Can you send a reference for that, Till?
Yes, when you go onto the Google Summer of Code site, and I will go to their Google Summer of Code, and when one goes to our project, one moment, please.
No problem. Where do you go then? Xbox
2010. Here, ticketed print monitoring system by Samantha.
T ticketed print management.
Print monitoring system.
Monitoring, thank you. Monitoring system. All right, I'll look it up.
And it is mentored by Danny Brennan.
Oh, by HP.
Ah, right. So I can send a note to Danny and say, Danny, what do you know about this?
What's going on?
Yeah, because this was not, is not, has not been very visible in open printing.
Yeah, I don't think I even knew about it. Okay.
The original, there was notes about it quite a long while ago, Glenn, but the individual in question was doing it independently, and I'll describe it briefly. It had to do with a large university print system dealing with accounting and, you know, quotas, you know, accounting and the opposite of a job ticket, burning a quota for, say, you know, color printed pages or whatever in the month. And my concern all along has been that it looked like reinventing the job ticket to me, which makes me nervous.
Well, yeah. Okay, we should look at that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know where you'll have to ask the mentor directly. I wasn't able to find any information online.
Really? Well, Danny is participating in PWG, so we can ask him. Unless Ira has direct contact with him.
I just managed to get a link to the GSOC project by Google searching ticketed print monitoring system.
I didn't know the title. Well, it should be investigated from the PWG's perspective, too.
Right. It should be investigated from the PWG and Open Printing's perspective because, in particular, we would really like it if the idea of the JTAPI library wasn't being reinvented. We would also really like it if IPP semantics weren't being thrown out in favor of other attributes for accounting.
Oh, I see. So it's a substitute for paper cut. Okay. Job.
So, you found it as well, Glenn?
Yeah, it has to be in its infancy. I mean, this kind of code is not just, you know, something you write in the summer.
Well, that was what concerned me about the original, more informal notes before this information here, was that it looked like biting off an enormous problem as though it were the sort of thing you could do on the side for a few months. I don't think it is.
They're doing some testing within a small group. It's on Ubuntu. Yeah, okay, we'll just have a look at it.
Yep.
All right, next.
Okay.
We have missed number four, Ira. You didn't write down what is number four, Sajin.
No, I misnumbered. I was doing cut and paste from other agendas, and I messed the numbering up. And what actually was... Since Glenn inserted I think I meant to put in mobile, you know, behavior guidelines and thus Glenn's discussion of mobile printing implementation, but I missed it. So I stuck that in as three and I stuck something else as four from that was three in our agenda. Status of GSOC FUMATIC project, Daniel, and so on. So in any case, yes, I meant to put in about the mobile printing effort, and I did in the minutes that I am now taking.
Okay.
Okay,
so let's go to number six.
Okay.
Anyone has any project ideas for the open printing, which are not so big projects which one can think about that a Google Summer of Code student could take them up easily?
Thank you.
Now, I didn't expect anybody to actually have anything right now, but it's just something to think about over the next 8 months.
Yeah, you're not hard because I have been thinking about new projects for Google.
or rather, a lot sooner than the next 8 months, because it seems like we always scramble in the last month to come up with project descriptions. And I really appreciated your basic idea, which is all of our projects are quite large.
Yes.
This is not always
very helpful.
And most
of them are the ones which remained from the year before because they were not taken up, probably because they were too big, and so never someone tried to take them up.
Yeah, but JTAP might become more favorable. I mean, I think Daniel said he might work on it, but you know, once you do more cloud stuff, there's going to be a lot of job tickets. Sorry, Ara.
Once you do more cloud stuff, the benefit of JTAPI, the library with a bunch of contributed backends for cracking and writing various job tickets, is suddenly going to become critical, because who else is going to develop this stuff, right? But there are going to be all these quasi-overlapping job tickets.
Yeah, whether we want them or not, there's going to be many job tickets.
Whether we want them or not, there already are many job tickets. Subsets of the Microsoft XPS one, variants of PPD being used as poor man's job ticket, variants of various other things more like PPD that are driver-centric that are being used, variants of Adobe ASCII job ticket, variants of small subsets of JDF in XML, which is horrible because of the encoding overhead. And we're going to have to deal with all of them
right. More
and more as cloud printing and service-based printing becomes more widespread and goes to the next generation, which is federation across more than one cloud service.
So we really, I think, as before the Google Summer of Code, need to really get JTAPI updated. And then that can be put into many small pieces that can be put together.
Why I was thinking it would be nice to have some of the new attributes in JTAPI. Very possibly a subset and an appendix in the JTAPI spec that says, here's the rationale for why the following 80 attributes were not included. Because they're strictly production printing attributes.
Right. Well, yeah, we could do that part, right. But the ones that now are critical or may be important to cloud or IPP everywhere or whatever, we need to get in.
Right.
And then we have a good chance of, you know, and then I think it'll become, as Till says, it'll become a little more sexy to write JTAPI, because there'll be a lot of people wanting something like that.
Right. A lot of people needing it. And
then almost actually writing a single back end is almost a project.
Well, that's what I was trying to lead to. If you have the Glenn Petrie, Danny Brennan, whomever, implementation of JTAPI as an open source C implementation that goes further than the current reference implementation, then you have this interface set of rules for a back end, right, from the abstract object model, the abstract job model. And once you have that, you can sit down and say, okay, a project is to write a little baby back end that just does PPD, classic PPD. This is real small. There aren't many, there's very few properties that are useful that are standard. And, you know, by the same token, one could do a small JDF library that was the PPD equivalent, horridly small subset of JDF, the, you know,
horridly
10
small.
Out of 1,000.
Other projects for Google Summer of Code might be, I don't know how far I'm going to get with the mobile thing, so there may be, you know, things to pick up there to somebody to finish. That might be a thing to do, and mobile will be very popular. What other aspects of printing do we need to worry about? Does Open Printing want to write a cloud solution? I love the chuckle. Whatever cloud means, right? This week.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so worried about the security part of cloud, I haven't even bothered to worry about printing yet.
That's about where I'm at with it.
Are you willing to put your personal documents up on the cloud with your Social Security number in it?
No. Or even with less sensitive things than your Social Security number and your name, even, you know, other personal identity stuff. Would you do that? Would you put something that was a scanned, effectively, photostat of some contract with a signature on it? Why would you do that?
Yes, I don't. I'm not sure. I'm waiting for one major security breach and watch cloud fall apart. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, but
well,
risk factors are just.
Given the current state of actual public reporting of security breaches, even in the U.S., probably 1 in 10 is ever publicly reported, even when legally it should have been.
Right, right.
Even in a regulated industry.
And I don't think we want to, in this group, want to get involved with security.
except to say use OpenSSL and or, you know, the open source TSS
right.
implementations. Here's good libraries to do basic security features. Don't reinvent them. These have been tested and evaluated by security professionals.
Right.
But, you know, and don't leave security out in your implementation, because if you do, adding it later will never be right. You will do it as Band-Aids, and you will do it badly.
Right.
But in terms of an open source, an open printing implementation of cloud, it is my blissful hope, Glenn, that and expectation that Mike Sweet is in fact already planning on writing the IPP extension operations for fetch jobs and report job status, you know, the new stuff on the server side, in CUPS anyway. So there will be an open source implementation of those operations and of the whole, you know, feature set. And if one doesn't want to use IPP, I don't think that honestly matters, because he's heavily modularizing CUPS in the 1.5 3.
IPP IRA. The problem is using GPL. I mean, you heard from Peter.
I totally understand that, and LGPL doesn't help, and I quite understand that.
I mean, it's gotten so bad now that Xerox will not let or has to go through legal if you use compiled GPL code.
A binary just for testing, not even for development. They have
That's
to go to legal to act.
Big corporations in their fear of GPL. So anything I write will all be CPL. No one agrees with that, then I'll stop writing, because I can't justify GPL anymore at all. Most major corporations are terrified of it. They're afraid of getting sued. And Xerox is big enough, Epson is big enough, HP is big enough, IBM, to get sued. So we're all getting very nervous.
And here are all these Chinese Android manufacturers shipping Android with binary everything.
Yeah, we just have to deal with our corporate lawyers, and they say no. If it says GPL, go away. I had to take a person off of a project, assign him to something else, destroy all the archives and the current copies of it, and have assigned another person to the project to finish it.
Starting from clean sheet and not using GPL code.
He uses GPL code, and I said, how'd you write that so fast? He said, I said, no, you can't do that.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen.
Right, but that's not what can happen. So we got to be very careful if we're going to make this stuff open. You know, like Fumatic can be GPL because no one uses it per se as code, as source. But anything that I'm doing with a mobile can't be GPL, and no one will use it. That's the problem. No one will use it. They'll look at it, say cute, and goodbye. So IPP is not the question.
Yeah, no, I quite agree. For what it's worth, I was 2 hours earlier in a TCG Embedded Systems TSS subgroup, the Trusted Software Stack, the equivalent of a TPM done wholly in software. And the discussion was around what are existing open source and commercial stacks available. It turns out there's about 8 or 9 that implement a TPM in software. And several are written in C and so on. But what I thought what you would find interesting, Glenn, was fully a third of them had a CPL license.
Right. Because they need, if they want them to get used, they have to be available to commercial vendors.
All the stuff that came from an IBM research lab in contributions was CPL.
Right.
And so I think we made a darn good decision in JTAPI years ago, and we ought to stick to that in the future. And when we develop new open printing projects, we should do them with CPL license on the code.
I could have never used it on the projects I've used it on, which would have wasted a lot of my time because I would have made the same thing with different names or something, you know, silly.
Right.
Silly stuff. So, anyway, that I don't want it to pin down that it's an IPP problem. It's really a license problem today. Because they're going to use whatever's implemented as long as it's implemented well, and they can use it. So, I'm off my bandwagon, sorry.
No, it was relevant when first we had this discussion 6 or 7 years ago, and or 8 years ago, and it remains relevant. Okay, so backends for JTAPI, you know, which is just another plug-in library, which is an awfully nice, clean, separable thing. It has no GUI.
So what are other missing items in Linux printing that people are worried about or concerned about or want that this group can address?
You mean separate from common print dialogue and GUI-centric?
In general, because we're looking at Google Summer of Code activities, and we got to think of areas, not so much specific projects.
Okay.
You know, so we don't want to do security. We do want to do CPD. We want to do more informatics if necessary. We want to do job tickets, blah, blah, blah. So what else do we want to do, though? What is an impedance right now to printing in Linux?
One thing is that we have now nice infrastructure for example, for automatic driver installation, but there are still many manufacturers not taking it up, making use of it.
Does that mean you need a tool?
For example, I'm in contact with Brother. They want to prepare for using it, but they didn't come around up to now with packages.
Wow.
For example, with Canon, they did not ever make packages for that. And in the very beginning, they were even interested. So, and other manufacturers like Samsung, for example, I don't have the right contacts to get things working.
I'm sorry, Till, that I don't either. I keep pressing this internally, but with no luck so far.
Those are things that Google Summer of Code can't address.
And so, drivers which are...
No, they can't. So this is a separate topic. This is not a Google Summer of Code.
Not unless you can figure out some way
it's
to put
it's a problem of open printing.
Right.
Ah, yes, it is, but that was, if we're going to that, that's a new topic.
Yes.
And I'm not caught up with you in the minutes anyway.
If you could think of a tool that a Google Summer of Code could write that would make these other vendors' drivers be accessible, then that could be a project. But unless you can think of a tool.
So you know, to make certain tools which make it easier for the vendors to adopt this driver.
Right. So that's an assignment for you, Till, to go off and think about that. What would that look like?
This would be a good idea to make some tools which make this make it much easier to make such drivers. And one thing is, all the manufacturers, except Epson, who uses the automatically downloading packages, they have their own way to deliver the drivers through their sites. And these drivers usually have a lot of problems. They work probably well with one or two distros and have big problems with others. And if the distros get updated every half year, the drivers are not maintained.
Oh, yeah, they certainly aren't. That is.
And so a driver for an older printer model does not work with the current distribution. And so one gets a lot of bug reports, which are not bugs in the distribution. They are sent to the distributions because this is the only working contact which the users have. There are no good contact at the manufacturers usually.
So I captured
by the manufacturers, they are rather left alone, so they report a bug against the distribution, and the distribution people can only say, this is a driver from the manufacturer, and they did it wrong, and therefore it does not work on our distribution.
So I captured that, Till, and I think we should leave it for you to report on sometime in either the next or the following meeting about what a tool might look like for that.
Yes, this is
What are the elements of a tool that would make it useful to one of these manufacturers? Because, I mean, even though I'm Epson, in general for open printing, we want all the print manufacturers to be represented so that Linux printing is fully represented. So I'm all in favor of a tool that makes this more, you know, up-to-date, automatic, etc.
So why are the proprietary drivers breaking? Is there not an API high level enough that it doesn't change?
There is the LSB, which gives a stable set of APIs across distros. But unfortunately, it is not very complete. Some stuff like dbus is still missing, or scanning.
Well, and until just now, it was really ancient CUPS libraries too. So you didn't even have the IPP encoding library that was proper.
And the reality from the print manufacturers like me is Linux represents 1% of the market. How many engineers would you like me to put onto this to recompile it when Red Hat, Ubuntu, blah, 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 recompiles their system and gives a new version? A half a person?
And who tests it? And the answer is at either the vendor or the Linux distro, no one tests it mostly because they consider it's difficult to test printing.
So that's the reality.
Therefore, we need the LSB and that it covers more stuff and goes forward so that they can base their stuff on the LSB and so make it working automatically on several distributions over several years.
And that's why we need the tool. So they just execute the tool. It knows, maybe it has a database that says for Ubuntu, the latest version is 10.10, you need this stuff, and maybe it recompiles their drivers for them automatically. I don't know, but that's what Till needs to think about. What would they have to do? And then zips it up or tars it up in a package and sends it off to somewhere. I don't know. We need to think about that. But if I can make it really simple for my company to create the package, and we already do, we already LSB compliant, we already have the automatic down, blah, blah, blah. But for the other companies, then that's what we need in this tool.
So now, between Linux and Mac OS X, we have market share of Vista. How do we critically differ from Mac OS X that drivers have to be substantially different?
Well, they are different. So there's the whole GUI differences, the whole interfacing differences, the API differences. Now,
yeah, there's pretty dramatic differences.
No. At the very bottom, no. But a driver is just more than the very bottom basic conversion code of image into, you know, language.
Yeah, Mac GUI for printing is not common printing dialogue, and it isn't ever going to be.
And it's never going to be like Microsoft, and it's never going to look like Linux. And it's going to look like Apple's. So no, those kind of things don't work. And Linux doesn't have sufficient commonality in a print. I mean, I bet you distros like Red Hat and Ubuntu and whatever label you can put on it would actually care if there wasn't a common print solution for all of them. Printing is so unimportant to them. They have to have it. That important to them. So if we really had a common print dialogue and a common print way to have drivers and one API for all of that stuff, they'd be very happy. That's one less problem they have to worry about.
Yeah.
Well, we're not there.
Right. Okay, so the drivers are shipping with GUIs on them, in them? They're not just the cups.
Oh, yeah.
No, they have to interface with these GUIs, and they have to add the vendor extensions. And so I have
right.
to have
so they're putting tabs in or whatever.
Oh yeah, it's not just a. Yeah, you'd be surprised what people call drivers.
Yeah. Broadly, it's everything on the client side. Everything.
That's in Epson. I was surprised. I always think of drivers as just the converter. In Epson, it's actually the thing we put on the CD, which goes in the box.
Yeah, which has
everything.
Much more concern about GUI than it does about just the simple conversion.
Right.
It wants to pop up status. It wants to influence level 2, level 3, you know, screens and the GUIs for printing.
And it comes, it perhaps one-tenth of the amount of data on the CD is the driver, which it's printing dialog extensions, and the other 90% are software toys to waste ink.
make revenue for print vendors. No. but we have private MIB problems, public MIB, it goes on and on and on and on. It's not.
Well, yeah. There is. That's the whole other aspect. MIBs and other management interfaces is a mess, even on one
platform. And Apple wants this data, and Microsoft wants this data, and Linux doesn't even look at it. And,
yeah.
And one thing is also printers have firmware bugs, and then the drivers are supposed to work around them.
Daniel, by the time you retire, the problem will still exist?
Well, but IPP everywhere will solve everything.
No.
Oh, no, not in the least.
No. I've been here. Done
IPP that. Everywhere will have no impact whatsoever on the wide variety of GUIs and operating system architectures for servers.
And it won't even have much impact on my low-end printers.
Well, if a low-end printer supports IPP at all, it can easily, trivially support IPP everywhere. It's not a high barrier of entry. But that doesn't change the fact that Mac has their GUI and service interface, and Windows does, and Linux has a great many, and various commercial Unixes have some more.
It goes on and on. I mean, it's really, we have CUPS raster, we have IP, we have PWG raster, and we have Apple's raster.
Right.
And we have Microsoft's XPS. The problems go on and on and on.
And we have enough variants of PDF to keep a whole development team busy forever just making the compile switches to generate different PDF generators or readers.
So it's not... It's been very difficult. And then you multiply that by the number of distros in Linux, and it makes it even worse. So there's not a lot of... like Epson's support, we try very hard to support Linux, but it is a cost trade-off.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably one of a few people in all of Epson who support Linux printing.
The bare bones, the driver that actually communicates with the printer, that is compatible between OS or Mac and Linux, but it's the UI stuff that is completely different?
Well, now, do you mean, how it communicates with the printer is print manufacturer determined, okay? So it basically talks, it gets complicated, because the critical factor in all coding, especially in drivers, is memory management and I.O. So is I.O. the same on a Macintosh as it is in Linux? No. You can hardly get to the USB port on Mac because they protect it, so users don't do funny things. Linux is wide open, so that part's a little different. The thing that does the transform, of course, is the same. It's probably even the identical code. But then what format do I get the data in from the OS could be different.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's why I told you before, like I'm doing the mobile stuff, I am going to abstract away as fast as possible from the GUI. So I'll write a minimal shell that does what it needs to do, nothing more, and go away. And then,
by the same token, I'm sure you've addressed things that we talked about in JTAPI reference implementation. You also want to not assume it's a full POSIX operating system and every malloc and everything is there. You kind of want to have to say, this is a freestanding library. You don't have to link 8 other libraries with it to get it to work.
In all of my drivers, you have to supply me the reference, the API for your malloc, because mallocs in mobile devices differ from that on desktops. There's no definition in C of the length of a char character. And I've worked on many systems where chars are 32 bits long. That's the smallest addressable unit.
Right.
Not 8 bits. There's no C definition for char.
Yeah.
And little problems like that happen in mobile.
Yeah, and if you then have a string that's an array of char, think about this. This is pretty ugly to write portable code to get at.
Right. Now you're saying, well, just store this into a byte or a char, and wait a minute, it all got padded with three bytes of zeros. What?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to my image?
And which Indian is the system?
Oh, we won't even go there.
Right. But I mean, this happens. I know Glenn sees this, and Till has probably seen it. If you go MIBWalk, implementations of printer MIB, which is in every shipping network printer for a long time now, if it has a MIB at all, you will find the bits in the wrong order in host resources MIB and printer MIB for the status. Commonly, probably a third of them have done it wrong. And they don't fix their bug because it'll break their old software, driver software, which depended on it being wrong.
You don't do a big Indian, little Indian test. You read a field, you know what the response is going to be, and you figure out if it's the right byte order.
Right.
You read your vendor name, and you say, is it EP or is it PE? Oh, no,
mm-hmm.
It's backwards, so I got to switch the bytes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're rambling here and stuff, but I mean,
no, but that's the scope of the problem of portability of drivers, because it's the underlying portability of the various operating systems. It's not very good.
And so we've had a very hard time coming up with common things. So I'm not sure, even after this many years, I know how to do it completely. I'm very good at writing, I was the first person in Epson to write a single driver for almost most of their low-end printers. I only have one driver. And most of Epson has a separate driver for each printer.
Yeah, I'm sure that there was great skepticism when you first did that, too.
It works. Still works. There's a lot of problems, and I'm not sure we can solve them all. But anyway, so I think we should think more. I like the idea of thinking about new Google of Summer Code, especially with the world of printing changing. Now the printers used to be smart. Then they got dumb. Now they have to get smart again. So it would be nice if they got smart in a smart way.
Yes, one thing is in one thing where printers get smart again are some. For example, some multifunction devices of HP, which can by themselves communicate with the internet without a computer. You can, for example, set up on HP site an email address, and your printer at your home prints the attachments of every email sent to that address. This thing is called ePrint. And this printer and this ePrint can be coupled with Google Cloud Print. And this printer also can download new firmware by itself without you needing some Windows program. It directly accesses HP server to get its new firmware.
I looked into that, Till, okay, for Epson's point of view. And you look at it as just...
Does Epson have such printers too?
No comment. But looking at the generic architecture system, basically that's their cloud, okay? And it really doesn't matter once you get to the print cloud service how you talk to your printers. I don't care. So they used email, and they can do all the stuff they want to do. They can communicate by some unknown foreign brand new HP protocol, which no one ever has to know about.
Yes, and well, one, the user knows it understands email, so he can send emails from any device,
but he's
like
sending
a cell phone,
an email.
And he can print.
No, he's sending email to the cloud provider.
Yes,
service.
And the protocol of the cloud from
to the
cloud
printer.
To the printers does not matter for the user.
To no one anymore, and that's a new change. So it's getting...
So... For the minutes, Glenn, to rewind a bit, after tools to make it easier to develop open printing portable drivers, not many vendors have taken up the OP driver approach yet and so on, I added, because of our discussion about the complexity of print drivers and of testing of print drivers across even Linux distributions, I added another top subject, tools to test print drivers and the printing chain without a printer. Our classic, we bring this up periodically, but honestly, regression testing, facilitating regression testing for Linux distros is really important because they won't have the printer in their shop, and if they don't test the driver against a new version, they will not realize that they actually managed to break the driver. And it does not follow that a well-written OP driver can't be broken by a distro, because that certainly happens all the time to lots of software.
I think there was an action item many, many moons ago for Ira McDonald to start a thread on that very discussion.
There was, actually. So I will, having put it in...
I happen to know that Ira McDonald's also writing about 90% of the PWG specs, so he's pretty busy these days.
No, I've managed to get Mike writing the majority of the IPP ones. I thought that was a pretty neat accomplishment, and he does such a fine job of it, too. I get to just kibitz and give him sections.
This is recorded, remember? Do you want him to hear this? No.
Yes, I know that, but, you know,
see,
Mike helps in this, in open printing, regularly.
This was a discussion that happened been happening for over a couple of years now.
Yeah, but I think it was one of the most, I mean, it's unfortunate that people leave various vendors and so on, so we lose threads of effort, but it was one, this year and the last year at Open Printing Summit, the idea of testing the print driver and print software chain without the live printer in order to have regression testing seemed to be like it's not a low-hanging fruit. It's not trivial to do. However, it would vastly encourage vendors to actually start doing open printing portable drivers, because look at the difference in cost of regression testing. One versus
Daniel,
500.
Part of the problem is I can write a very good driver, Ubuntu, Red Hat, blah, 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 and for some reason my print comes out pink. And you're going, okay, what's wrong with this? And the
right.
And the first person the end user calls is Epson. You're going, okay.
Right.
So we don't know if it was the application, if it was GhostScript, if it was part of CUPS, which is unlikely, but we'll just say that. There are many, many pieces of software in the actual chain or piping of the data, the original app, to the print driver. And that's never, ever been successfully testable or, well, testable, basically. So
that's
an interesting Google Summer of Code. We've discussed it many times, never got very far, but how can you test the print chain?
Mm-hmm.
And who did what to what when? And you sometimes you'll find that, well, GoScript got the wrong command and it turned everything pink. And you go, okay. And so it's not the printer's fault, but we will get blamed because in the end, that's the only thing they see.
Well, and, you know, I've heard people from the distro saying, we get the first call, it's not the vendors. Well, they certainly get them too, but they have the exact same problem because they have to pick the brains of the complainer to say, what application were you actually using? Did you check the version of Ghostprint that you have installed? And, you know, all of these corners that we have little control over. None.
And so there's no way even for the vendor, let alone the end user, to be able to test where something might have gone wrong. I mean, vendors will sometimes, an application will send the units in millimeters and you're expecting inches and you go, what? So things come out weird. So that is would be a very useful thing to many people.
And there, by the way, Lars and Daniel, we would be abstracting completely away from the GUI side. That's the one part we would not test. The assumption is that print came from somewhere, goes into a standard print chain. Here's, you know, cups, client side, and here's ghost print, and here's some filters. What happens? You know, and capture it, binary capture, obviously, not to a printer. You know, but capture the output of that pipeline, that print chain, and, you know, be able to have some reference stuff so that you could immediately identify, worked last month, does not work with the new build of this distro or the new build of Ghostprint, Ghostscript, or whatever.
Anyway, so
because right now we have nothing. We have the, you know, spotty, you know, build it, test it. My particular application seemed to work okay, and right now we carry on writing more code. This is not really regression testing.
You know, and why does GIMP put out a different output than some other application? Well, GIMP has its own drivers.
Yeah, well, right. A whole other aspect is that GIMP and various other applications have their own drivers and intend to continue to have their own drivers. So
they're good drivers, don't get me wrong, but they're not the quality of Epson's drivers.
Yes.
So
GIMP has two modes. If you have GIMP,
I understand, Till, but the point is that happens.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, gentlemen, it's now 20 minutes after the hour, and I need to adjourn. I will add
one short notice.
The numbers are there for the times from Daniel Dressler, for the times which XML and SQLite need.
Thank you.
And one thing in addition, at least for the PPD file list, compressed PPDs is much, much faster. It takes less than a second. And PPD files generated by the compressed PPDs are in the order of magnitude of PPD files generated by SQLite.
Good.
I can't give enough exact numbers because I don't have the same computer as Daniel.
Okay, right. Not apples and apples. But thank you. Okay.
Wait. All right. I should mention that I will not be able to attend any more meetings until next summer just because I have class every time. But I will, and I have been, listening to all the recordings. So
okay.
So we need to talk. You need to send you and we'll just put it in the recording.
if moving our teleconference time would facilitate your participation, we'd certainly consider it.
Thank you. But I have a very science-heavy course load, and we'd have to move it to, like, afternoon.
Afternoon
my time. Don't worry about that.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll carry on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.